morning. Delighted to welcome you all to the hearing room. We have a special group of students that are joining us this morning from Brookfield Central. Would they stand, please? Great. Thank you very much for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with a cleverly entitled program called Caught with Class. It is a national award-winning program that is sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and Missouri. Students across the state are invited to come and join us for an oral argument. If they agree to come, they are given some materials about the case. They may engage in some activities in the classroom on the case. They come, listen to oral argument, and join with a justice at noon who is assigned to meet with the students. The discussion at noon is open to everyone, including counsel, and the discussion centers on the procedures the court uses to take and hear and decide cases. The discussion at noon is not about the substantive issues in the case. And you're all very fortunate today because I've been assigned to be the justice at noon. I have a terrible cold, and if we play our cards right, you all will get it from me. First of all, is there anyone here who would like a summary of the case that we're about to hear? If so, would you raise your hand and the marshal will give you a summary? Okay. Let me introduce the court to you all and then I'll call our first case. Starting on my far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Seated next to him is Justice Patience Robinsack. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Brooks. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And to Justice Bradley's right, Justice David Prosser. And on the far right, Justice Annette Ziegler. With the introductions made, I'll look at the lineup with you for today's oral argument. Cases 12-18-122, Anthony Gagliano and Company versus Open First LLC and others. Arguing on behalf of Quad Graphics is Michael Apfeld, and that will be 15 minutes. 10 minutes, Attorney Lisa M. Lawless, arguing on behalf of Robert Kraft. 30 minutes, Attorney Thomas Armstrong, arguing on behalf of Anthony Gagliano. And Mr. Apfeld, you've got 5 minutes in rebuttal. Reed? All right. Mr. Apfeld, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice Abramson, other justices, may it please the court. My name is Michael Apfeld. I represent Petitioner Quad Graphics, Inc. And because the time is short and the issues are disparate, I would propose to first address the general principles of law and the Court of Appeals treatment of them, and then move immediately to Gagliano's various contentions, principally that the statute has changed the common law and that the sublease was not signed by Quad Graphics. Now, in the most general sense, the issue facing this court, at least as far as Quad is concerned, concerns the circumstances under which one person may impose contractual liability on another person with whom it has never had any direct dealings. Now, here, of course, the issue arises in a particular factual context, specifically an attempt by a landlord, Gagliano, to impose liability for the entire remaining term of its underlying lease with the primary tenant, New Electronic Printing Systems, or New EPS, on a third party to which that tenant had transferred some portion of its right of occupancy, that is, Quad. Now, the law has long established the overall test for determining when the landlord may recover unpaid rent from a third party. It's really quite simple. It may recover when the third party is an assignee, and it may not when it is a mere subtenant. Now, those terms are, of course, merely labels, but the test for applying them is equally well established. A transferee from a primary tenant is only an assignee if it takes the entire remaining leasehold estate of the primary tenant. Anything less, even a single day, and the transferee is a subtenant without any liability of the landlord for rent.
Even when they're in the premises, on the premises?
Even when they are on the premises. And thus, the rule imposing liability on an assignee may be seen as a very narrow exception to the otherwise uniform requirement that contractual obligations may only be imposed by the actual parties or on the actual parties to the contract.
That doesn't sound right to me. If I'm sitting on somebody else's property and using it, I don't care whether there's a lease agreement or not. I've got to pay them or get out.
That actually is not the law, as it has heretofore been declared and by decades, if not centuries, of decisions from this court.
Right.
Counsel, don't they have to pay for the month-to-month occupancy at the very least?
At the very least, there are theories under which. Now, keep in mind, in this case, Quadgraphics did, in fact, pay.
Well, that's the point. So
yes.
your statement is just too broad. Your statement that unless the you have a personal contract between the landlord and whoever is occupying it, then the occupier doesn't have to pay any money. That's just too broad.
There are ways in which the landlord may recover rent for the period of occupancy.
But tell me, where in Fine's opinion does he make this great era of law that overturns hundreds of years of...
The first error of law is in simply ignoring these hundreds of years of decisions.
Here.
Not a word in this decision acknowledges that law, attempts to apply that law, or attempts to determine whether or not Quad was an assignee or a subtenant.
So how does he then hold against your client?
He holds against our client on the basis that our client, the subtenant, he does at least recognize that there is a sublease, accepted the benefits of the lease, and so succeeded to all the liabilities of the primary tenant.
Where does he say that?
Well, excuse me one moment, Your Honor. The entire decision of Quad's liability...
Paragraph 28.
...occurs between paragraphs 35 and 36 of the opinion. After acknowledging that Gagliano's consent to the assignment was conditioned on, supposedly conditioned on, the assumption by any future transferees of the rights, the Court of Appeals says, because you accepted the benefits of the lease, you therefore accepted these obligations as well. And that is simply contrary to law. First, I think that the court...
If the Court of Appeals were correct, then you could never really sublease a property for less than the full term of the lease. Here it was, what, 4 months?
It was four months. They were actually, when we refer to the lease, it is, in fact, slightly more complicated than that.
There are three parts. The four-month extension, but
yes.
For one lease, it's not full 4 years left, and for another,
somewhere,
2 years, right.
Somewhere between 20 and 39 months were left.
Right.
Quadgraphic subleased for four, occupied for four, paid for four. And nevertheless, I believe you are correct, under the principle espoused by the Court of Appeals, not only would all subtenants be at their peril, at least if the landlord inserted such a provision somewhere in the lease, but candidly, there's no stopping point.
And general, didn't the major lease here say no assignments and no subleases, correct?
The lease itself said no assignments or subleases without the prior consent, which consent shall not unreasonably be withheld.
The lease.
Yes.
But generally the landlord, if you've got two people that are both solvent, doesn't want an assignment either because he wants to be able to collect from either one, right?
Yes.
So that's generally why you don't want to say that, not that you don't want to take the money from whoever is the assignee or the subtenant, but you want to keep the first guy on the hook so you're going to have two people that can pay for the term of the lease, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in this case, you would have to look first at the major lease, what were its provisions, and then look at what is labeled the sublease. Now, in the sublease, it specifically says it's not to be construed as an assignment. What do you make of that?
Well, I make of it that is the absolute clearest expression of the intent of the parties.
Let me just stop you a minute now. We're looking at the same paragraph in the sublease. So is that paragraph sufficient to override the concerns that are raised by opposing counsel that under the law this is still an assignment, even though the lease says it's not an assignment? Is it sufficient to override the concerns he raised?
Let me try to answer that question. First, if this document had given Quad the right of occupancy for the entire remaining term of the lease, but then said this is not to be construed as an assignment, under the majority rule, that disclaimer would not be effective, because the actual transfer of the remainder of the leasehold estate was sufficient to establish privity of estate. But you can't just look at that one sentence. You have to look at what is actually being transferred, which is a right of occupancy for only a fraction of the remaining terms of the lease. Now, part of your question asks, does that answer Gagliano's concerns? I have to ask you, Your Honor, which specific concerns are...
His contention is, regardless of the contractual agreement that this lease shall not be an assumption of the primary lease, which it says clearly, his assertion is that doesn't make any difference. That there's you putting that in the sublease does not change the fact that this is an assignment. And your response to me is, well, if Quadgraphics had taken the full premises for the full remaining time of the leases that are at issue, then he would be right. But without that fact, it does make a difference. Am I understanding you correct?
That is correct, because it is not within a landlord's power to unilaterally impose future terms and conditions other than use restrictions and that kind of thing on a subtenant. That is the law. And it's not a matter of trying to undo something. The fact is that there simply is no relationship. There's no privity of contract, and there's no privity of estate, hence no basis for imposing the obligation unless the transferee takes the whole thing, in which case it's an assignee and not a subtenant. If it takes less than the whole thing, the disclaimer of assignment is simply an additional set of belts or suspenders or whatever metaphor you want to use.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question? Yes.
Your opposing counsel speaks of a presumption of assignment. When there's entry and occupation and payment going to the landlord, he says the law establishes that there is a presumption of assignment, albeit a rebuttable presumption. Is that your understanding of the law also?
That is my understanding of the common law.
Yes, that's...
That is my understanding of the common law. And let me respond in two ways. Let me first respond to the common law, but I will tell you that I am not sure that that aspect of the common law can be sustained in light of today's statute.
Took from your brief kind of a tepid acknowledgement that that was the law. Certainly a very assertive statement by your opposing counsel, that is the law, but you did not seem to be take issue with that, but you didn't wildly embrace it either.
Well, we do mention the statutory qualification in our briefs. But let me first address the common law. If the acknowledgement is tepid, it is only because the presumption itself is tepid. And the cases of this court and of many others demonstrate it's not merely rebuttable, it's the most fragile presumption possible. And if you look at the very authorities cited by Gagliano, you will see that one of the ways of rebutting it is by the proof of a sublease. And we have a sublease here. It's quite clear. That is rebutted. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I just wanted to make sure that I understood your position on that area of the common law.
To follow up, just so I'm clear, Justice Bradley, you're saying even if they don't take the full premises for the full amount of the lease, there's still a presumption that there is an assignment? I misunderstood what you said.
Well, that certainly is Gagliano's position. Gagliano's position is basically if there is evidence.
No, I don't want to know his position.
Well, okay.
I want you to explain to me what you explained to Justice Bradley, which is your position. Opposing counsel is able.
My position is that under the common law, an exceedingly tepid presumption of an assignment arises by virtue of two facts, occupancy and payment of rent to the landlord.
Okay, so even if there's not occupancy of the entire premises, even if there's not occupancy throughout the term of the lease.
No. That's only where you start if that's all you know. Those are the only two facts you know. Facts such as you have postulated here, that is, occupancy for less than the entire term, i.e. a sublease, occupancy for less than all of the premises, a fractional lease, occupancy with strings attached. All of those things rebut the presumption. It is the most tepid and vanishing of presumptions whatsoever. And certainly in this case, it has been rebutted for any of a number of reasons, first and foremost of which is the sublease itself.
Counsel, I want to ask you about what relief you seek.
Okay. First and foremost, the decision of the Court of Appeals must be reversed. It's bad law. The law must be declared, and the people of the state of Wisconsin should be, the confusion should be clarified. Second, this court should hold that as a matter of law, Quad was not an assignee. Third,
Why isn't it as a matter of law?
As a matter of law, it is not an assignee because whatever tepid presumption there was completely rebutted by this sublease.
Because they were in for less than the full term?
First and foremost, yes, as well as, you know, rights of reverter and other facts that we've set forth.
So what were they doing there? Because if they're if it's a sublease, did they get the approval of the landlord?
I see my red light is on you. I presume you would like me to continue to answer.
Why not?
Yes. They were there because the operations of the actual primary tenant, New EPS, were being wound down because New EPS was a bust, despite having been lent many.
So they're not there as the subtenant?
I'm sorry.
So they're not there as subtenant?
They are there as subtenant. They became a subtenant.
Without approval from Gagliano.
Well, certainly without express approval and.
What was the implied approval?
There is a provision in the underlying lease that says if you have notice and if you fail to object, then approval is implied. I don't believe that the record is developed as to whether or not he had notice of the sublease. I will tell you right now, I cannot point to any evidence in the record that he affirmatively did.
That's why I'm saying, I keep saying to you,
yes,
Quad was there.
Quad was there.
You say as a subtenant.
As a
without
subtenant.
Without approval.
Yes.
And there was approval for an assignment, right?
No. No, I'm not sure I understand that question.
Ms. Judge Fine says...
You're saying there
paragraph
was
Paragraph 35, which we looked at before.
Yes.
The assignment was conditioned on new electronic shall be transferred to or otherwise acquired by a third party. Third party shall assume and become liable. Was that third party quad?
Your Honor, you are reading from a quotation that refers to a document that was executed by Gagliano in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
It has, when it refers to the assignment of the leases, that is referring to a transaction that took place in 2002. It has nothing directly to do with either the 2006 acquisition by Quad of new EPS's parent company or the sublease in general. Now, it's the conclusion of the Court of Appeals, and it is, it's the conclusion of the Court of Appeals that this document is read into the lease. I will note that in Gagliano's response, he effectively declines to attempt to defend that position. And there are many good reasons to decline, to defend it, because it simply does not operate the way the Court of Appeals does. But there is, that document simply does not refer to a transaction that took place 6 years in the future.
So you think 35, back to where I started, 35 and 36 are just gone, that they're not worth anything as written. Is that your point?
Well, certainly the conclusions in them are not worth anything as written. No, they're not.
Okay.
Chief,
go ahead.
If I may. I want you to be prepared, counsel, on your 5 minutes of rebuttal. I had asked you what relief you were seeking.
Yes.
I knew what your answer was going to be. There are three reliefs you're seeking, and it's the third one, the one that you didn't get to, that I have a question about. That relief is a remand for alter ego. It's not clear to me whether the remand, given your footnote, is to the Court of Appeals to address the issue or if it's to the Circuit Court and the whole waiver thing. So on rebuttal, if you can answer what you really help me better understand the third request for relief.
It's a very interesting question, and I look forward to addressing it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel,
Justice Prosser.
You moved to correct the appellate record. I think you ought to say something in that so that there can be some effective rebuttal.
May I address
yes,
that?
Yes, you may.
And I must warn you that it is not a single-sentence answer. The topic, which is our motion to correct record, actually has a four-layered response, and I will try to be brief. The first layer is you actually do not have to address the motion to correct the record because Gagliano long ago waived any right to object to the absence of a signature. And there are two parts to that waiver argument, the first part being that Gagliano itself introduced this document at trial. And in addition, the first time that the supposed absence of a signature was raised was 4 weeks ago in his response brief. That's point number one. Point number two is the ultimate object of this court is to determine what the parties were really talking about in the trial court. And as I think our motion to correct the record sets forth, and it would take me 10 minutes to go through these facts, I think it sets forth that every party knew they were dealing with a fully executed sublease, and there was never any question raised about that. The third point is, under the law, Quad signature really doesn't matter. Let's pretend for a moment that Quad, in fact, didn't sign that, although we know, in fact, that it did. The issue facing this court is, what did new EPS intend to convey? What quantum of the estate did it intend to convey? We know what quantum of the estate it intended to convey because it put its signature on the sublease. And there's no evidence that it intended to convey more. And finally, you have to reverse, even if you pretend that the sublease just doesn't exist at all. You have to reverse because it's bad law. And you have to reverse because Gagliano never moved for summary judgment, and we never had the we never even knew this was an issue, much less had the opportunity to attempt to address it. And that is as short a response as I can make to that.
Do they deny that it was signed?
No one has ever contended that that signature was not genuine. And if you look at the sequence of events, the fully signed sublease was produced very early on. Months, if not a year or more, passes. Trial counsel for Gagliano, not Mr. Armstrong, apparently misplaces the packet of materials and says, would you please send it again? So we send it again, including the fully signed version of the sublease. Now, this request actually comes after we filed, I believe it's after we filed our brief in support of the motion for summary judgment. And upon receipt of that packet, counsel sends an email saying, whose signature is that on behalf of Quad? Not did Quad sign it, you know, I have a blank here. Whose signature is it? He was told whose it was. And from that point on, the discussion changes completely. There's a lot of back and forth about whether this is the only sublease, and in fact it was, and counsel for Gagliano, trial counsel, ultimately concedes it, and then goes on to introduce that sublease for its own purposes at trial. And in the course of so doing, has on the stand the very person who did sign it, Andrew Schiesel, who identifies the document and describes its purpose. In the course of doing that, by the way, trial counsel for Gagliano, whether knowingly or not, attempts to get the witness to characterize it as an assignment, and the witness says, no, this is a sublease. It's a sublease between New EPS and Quad. Have I answered Your Honor's questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney Lisa M. Lawless.
May it please the Court. My name is Lisa Lawless, and along with Ann Maher, who's here with me today, I represent the defendant, one of the defendants, respondent petitioner, Robert Kraft. Mr. Kraft is an individual who was sued in this case by the plaintiff, Anthony Gagliano and Company, who I'll just refer to as Gagliano, on the basis that Mr. Kraft provided a personal guarantee in the May 22, 2000 lease. Gagliano claimed breach of that lease because the tenant under the lease at the time in 2008 moved out of the property before Gagliano contends the lease expired. The claims in this case went to trial, a jury trial in July 2011 in Milwaukee County Circuit Court. Gagliano presented 3 days of evidence and, to the jury. At the close of Gagliano's evidence, New EPS, who's already been defined, opened first, and Robert Kraft moved for a directed verdict on Gagliano's argument that the May 22, 2000 lease was extended by a notice provided by Gagliano in 2005. The circuit court found that Gagliano failed to carry its burden of proof that a landlord option to extend the lease, which is paragraph 2.4 of that lease, was properly invoked because the notice or the purported notice from the landlord was not served on the tenant at the time of the notice. The notice was in 2005, and the tenant was New EPS at that time. On the directed verdict was granted, so the claims under that May 2000 lease were dismissed. Then there were claims under a 2006 memorandum of lease and a claim by Gagliano for damage to the roof of the premises, those reached the jury. The jury found no liability on any of those claims against the defendants that were facing those claims. Post-trial motions were filed by Gagliano. On January 6, 2012, the circuit court entered judgment dismissing the claims of Gagliano against Kraft, Mr. Kraft, and that dismissal was with prejudice. The only claim against Mr. Kraft in this case was under his personal guarantee that he was liable for the breach of lease. He was liable to pay as a guarantor for the breach of lease. The claims against Kraft were dismissed with prejudice. Judgment of costs of just over $7,500 were awarded to Kraft, and the case was dismissed as to Kraft.
Counsel, if the circuit court based the lack of liability for your client on a failure of notice to extend the lease by the landlord, now, if we were to conclude that the notice was okay, doesn't this matter have to go back to the trial court because your client made some claims of fraud that this paragraph that the landlord could extend the lease unilaterally? I don't exactly understand the parameters of fraud, okay. But usually it's a fact question.
Right.
Would that go back to the trial court if that were the case?
Yes. Well, can I back up for
sure,
one moment?
Sure.
Because the court doesn't even really need to reach these issues as to Kraft because Gagliano appealed to the Court of Appeals on the dismissal of the claims against Kraft, New EPS, Open First, and Quad Graphics. Okay. And at the end of the day, the Court of Appeals issued its decision, and in its decision, it left untouched the dismissal of the claims against Robert Kraft. It didn't reverse that dismissal.
Yeah, but the dismissal at the trial court of those claims were all based on a improper notice. So if the notice is good, that doesn't get rid of those claims. I mean, if the Court of Appeals said the notice was good, I don't know what this court's going to say. But if we said the same thing, my question to you is, what do we do with the fraud claims?
Well, I'll answer that question and then come back to my point.
I'll
take you first.
Yeah.
If the notice, or if this court finds the directed verdict was improper because it was a clear error, that it would be remanded to the circuit court so that the issues, any issues that were to be decided for the breach of the 2000 lease would go to a jury trial. And if you look at the special verdict that was submitted before the directed verdict, you see a number of different defenses, including fraud, misrepresentation, including whether Mr. Kraft's guarantee encompassed or his guarantee was breached or he's liable under his guarantee, and also whether his obligations under his guarantee were materially altered, which is another defense.
Yes. Okay.
Those would be remanded. One of the aspects of the Court of Appeals decision that is, I would say, improper is that the Court of Appeals purported to speak to the issue of whether Kraft and New EPS and Open First could raise the issue of fraud and misrepresentation and whether the landlord extension provision was unenforceable for fraud. And that wasn't a proper issue before the Court of Appeals because it wasn't decided by the jury. It hadn't been reached at all. The only decision on that issue was a summary judgment decision. Gagliano moved to dismiss that defense, and the circuit court denied it because there are issues of fact.
Okay. So, all right. Thank
and
you.
To back up, my copy of the Court of Appeals decision is extremely mangled because it's a little bit interesting of all the decisions I've ever read. But at the end of the day, for Mr. Kraft, the guarantor, if you look at the mandate of the decision or the paragraph 37 of the decision, the Court of Appeals says, we reverse the trial court's dismissal of Gagliano's claims against New EPS, Open First, and Quad Graphics. The Court of Appeals says earlier in the decision that it's not going, that Gagliano's briefs do not separately address the trial court's dismissal of any of Gagliano's claims against Kraft. And so, therefore, that's why the Court of Appeals doesn't touch the dismissal of Kraft. There was a dismissal with prejudice in the circuit court. That was not reversed by the Court of Appeals. And if Gagliano thought that if Gagliano thought that was an oversight or that was error, Mr. Gagliano needed to petition for review to this court for reversal of the Court of Appeals' failure to reverse the dismissal as to Kraft.
You know, I'm in the Court of Appeals' opinion again, but my recollection is when I read it that there was a footnote that they said we're not going to independently address Kraft, but they draw Kraft into the dismissal at the trial courts on the basis of notice. I mean, they don't itemize them out, but because Kraft was a guarantor, not a signee to the someone that signed the lease. But I thought that they specifically did deal with Kraft in a footnote.
That's footnote one. It's unusual. The court says that it's not going to separately address the claims against Kraft, except insofar as the issues they are discussing implicate his guarantee. Yeah. Well, the only claims against Kraft relate to his guarantee.
Right.
The reason I can bet.
But if there's no valid lease extension, then Kraft isn't guaranteeing anything.
Right.
So it really turns on the same issue.
And the court need not reach that, but we agree that the circuit court was correct and did not commit clear error and was not clearly wrong in finding that there was not a proper notice to extend the lease. The circuit court based this decision not on documentary evidence entirely. It was an issue of fact, an application of contracts to facts and testimony. And because it was a mixed basis of facts and testimony and not just contracts, the Court of Appeals should have applied more substantial deference to the decision of the circuit court. The circuit court heard 3 days of testimony. The circuit court was able to weigh the relevant evidence, assess credibility, and decided that Mr. Gagliano knew that New EPS was the tenant at the time of the notice and knew that the provision required notice to the tenant. There is only one tenant under the lease, the entity that's occupying the premises in 2005. The issue, there's mention.
If you've got a jury, you don't have the trial court weighing the evidence. That's what you let the jury do.
Well,
so if that's what the trial court did, that's the problem.
No, weighing the trial court is seeing what evidence was put into the record and seeing whether there's any facts that upon which a jury could decide that proper notice was given. So, and based upon the evidence that the judge heard, all of the evidence added up to the fact that New EPS was a tenant and that notice wasn't provided.
So what do you want this court to hold? That Mr. Kraft has no liability on nothing?
Well, a bottom line, yes. But we would argue that the Court of Appeals did not reverse as to Kraft, and that should stand. If I could just address the reason why in just 1 second. The reason why the Court of Appeals didn't reverse as to Kraft is because in the briefs to the Court of Appeals, Gagliano argued that the motion for a directed verdict was only filed by New EPS and Open First. So Gagliano did not provide the Court of Appeals the necessary tools or basis upon which it could reverse as to Kraft. It's akin to filing a complaint against the defendant but not having any allegations against the defendant that show him to be liable. The Court of Appeals was correct in not reversing the dismissal of Kraft, but the Court of Appeals was incorrect in addressing any issues relating to Kraft. And that's why we ask this court to hold that the dismissal of Kraft stands because it was not reversed by the Court of Appeals.
Well, that footnote one does not say Kraft is free of all obligations. It says it's only free of some.
Well,
it goes on to say that they don't address the matter. Except insofar as Kraft's obligations under a personal guarantee of one of the leases are affected by our decision reversing the dismissal of Gagliano's claims. What does that mean to you?
Well, the problem is an appellate decision at bottom, what happens as to each party is determined by its instruction, its mandate as to whether claims against that party are dismissed or not, or reversed or not. In this case, the Court of Appeals did not reverse as to the dismissal of Kraft. And there is a judgment dismissing all claims against Kraft with prejudice, and that judgment was never reversed. So any of the statements of the Court of Appeals and the decision about Kraft are a nullity. They don't have any binding effect because all claims against Kraft in this case were dismissed with prejudice. Thank you.
Chief? If this court would say, the circuit court got it right vis-a-vis the notice issue, there was improper notice and therefore no extension, this court could be dispositive, and there would be no need to get to the issues presented by Quad Graphics in its petition for review.
I think that's correct. Attorney Apfel can
confirm
that.
How much do you want us to tackle the Court of Appeals opinion, or what relief are you asking with regard to notice or the assignment versus subtenant issues? You're joining Quad, of course, a lot of your stuff.
Quad is joining us, but the assignment doesn't relate to us, doesn't relate to Mr. Kraft. It's not really an issue that's pertinent to him, but Quad has filed a paper saying they support our arguments. And Quad and New EPS, even though it's not a party to this in this court, and Open First all can take advantage of the reversal of the Court of Appeals on the directed verdict. And we would argue that the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed in full, and the decision of the circuit court is appropriate, should be affirmed, and should stand as to all issues.
Well, your prayer for relief, your conclusion in your brief at page 48, says, this court should reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals in its entirety, affirm the judgment of the circuit court, and then says, and remand for further proceedings consistent with the court's decision. What would the further proceedings be?
They wouldn't be anything relating to Mr. Kraft. There wouldn't be any claims remaining against him.
Your opposing counsel says remaining against him is the claim vis-a-vis the guarantee on the May 2000 lease and subsequent amendment.
And this court reversed the Court of Appeals and found that the notice wasn't proper, that the circuit court properly entered a directed verdict, then there are no claims remaining against Mr. Kraft under the guarantee of the 2000 lease. There is that all matters relating to the 2000 lease have been resolved, and then the other issues in the case were resolved by the jury verdict, which wasn't appealed to the Court of Appeals or to this court.
How much money is involved in this case, if you lose?
If it's in the record.
The millions.
How much
was it
asked for? What was the jury told, if anything?
Let me ask the question. My understanding in reading some of the briefs is rent was $40,000 a year. Is that your understanding, or do you have a different understanding, or no understanding at all?
I'm not sure what the rent. I wasn't trial counsel, so.
The jury verdict was zero. Right. So that's what's in the record as far as an award that has been made or not made thus far. So
and
in the record, it's zero.
I've seen mention of, as to the other claims under the 2000 lease, I saw documents from Gagliano that claim damages or entitlement to money in the millions of dollars. So I believe it is quite significant, and that's why the issue of the guarantee of Mr. Kraft is very significant to him, and he preserve the issues below that should be reversed from the Court of Appeals decision.
Is it in the record that your client raised any defenses regarding the guarantee? Because, you know, a lease is one thing, a guarantee is another, and they're separate and distinct contracts and creatures under the law. We have cases that are only about guarantees and not about the underlying lease. We have cases that are about the lease and not the underlying guarantee. They're separate and distinct concepts. So part of what is concerning me is if the guarantee issue wasn't appealed and the status of the guarantee is that it is dismissed, how can someone argue that that's somehow tethered to our decision regarding a lease? They're separate.
Right.
The status of the guarantee is it's dismissed. If that wasn't
appealed,
then...
You The court could say the claims against Kraft remain dismissed because the Court of Appeals didn't reverse the dismissal of them, but the issue of the liability under a breach of lease is a separate issue.
A contract relating to a guarantee is separate and distinct from whether or not a lease, and the circumstances involving a lease may or may not survive. So to me, this case could be entirely about the guarantee, too. I mean, if it were a different circumstance, you could have appealed or they could have appealed the determination of the guarantee. We'd be arguing about whether or not the guarantee is this kind of guarantee, that kind of guarantee, you really did guarantee this. I mean, those arguments go on and on and on and on. But right now, the status of the guarantee is it's done. It was dismissed.
Right.
And that wasn't appealed, right?
Except for the Court of Appeals decision. But the defense...
The lease was appealed.
The
circumstances of the lease. But the automatic determination that somehow the guarantee flows from the lease troubles me a little bit. So, counsel, when you argue, I need you to address that.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Armstrong, representing Mr. Gagliano.
Yeah, may it please the court, my name is Tom Armstrong, and I do represent the Gagliano Company. I guess because we have addressed the Kraft issues last, I'll address them first because they're freshest in everyone's mind. Justice Ziegler, to answer your question, there was an appeal taken from the dismissal of Kraft that is in the notice of appeal. The briefing attacked the proposition that the dismissal of Mr. Kraft was proper. Justice Roggenzach is absolutely correct in her statement that the only basis for the dismissal of Mr. Kraft was the trial court's finding that the leases were not properly extended due to defective notice. That was reversed by the Court of Appeals. And in addition to the footnote, the Court of Appeals expressly stated that the lease extension, quote, was binding on Kraft as guarantor of the May 22, 2000 lease, and that Kraft's obligations under his personal guarantee of the May 22, 2000 lease were, quote, affected by our decision reversing the trial court's dismissal of Gagliano's claims against New Electronic Printing Systems, LLC, Open First, LLC, and Quad Graphics.
What are you reading from, counsel?
I am reading from, I'm quoting from the Court of Appeals decision.
Paragraph.
And.
Is that footnote one?
Excuse me?
Part of footnote one.
It was not part of note one. This was in the text of the decision. Let's see if I can quote the precise page. This is opinion paragraph 27, I believe.
Oh, yes, that's the paragraph that runs for two pages.
Yes, but the Court of Appeals specifically found that the basis for the dismissal of Mr. Kraft was solely the trial court's determination that the leases were not extended. Now, we have Mr. Kraft arguing here about whether the leases were properly extended, and I think it bears emphasis that the tenant, the primary tenant in the case, New EPS and Open First, did not seek review of the Court of Appeals determination that the leases were extended. Therefore, the tenant has certainly acquiesced in the Court of Appeals determination that the leases were extended.
Counsel, the tenants don't have any money here, though, right? Aren't they just companies that, I mean...
To the best of my knowledge, that's correct, yeah, Justice Roggenzach.
So, you know,
there was no appeal. However, those impecunious tenants did participate in the Court of Appeals proceeding. They retained counsel. Counsel filed a brief on their behalf, but they did not seek review of the decision.
Counsel, as I understood your argument, there were three claims against Kraft, and that you acknowledge that you did not appeal to the dismissal of two of the three claims, that you are asserting only that you did appeal the dismissal vis-a-vis the
May 2000 lease and the subsequent amendment to that lease.
That's correct, Your Honor. There were three leases involved. Kraft only guaranteed one of them. So Kraft did not guarantee the 2001, I believe it's May, not sure if it's May 18 or October 2001, and there was a memorandum of lease that was referenced by counsel for Kraft. That was not a lease. It's not even part of this case, but that also was not guaranteed by Mr. Kraft. Mr. Kraft guaranteed the May 22,000 lease and any and all subsequent amendments to that lease and extensions to the lease.
The other two claims that were dismissed, you did not appeal.
That is correct, Your Honor, because Mr. Kraft did not guarantee those claims. And I would like to address the request for relief here and what the Court of Appeals held with respect to Mr. Kraft. The Court of Appeals held that Mr. Kraft's failure to read the lease that he guaranteed could not provide a defense to his guarantee. In other words, he could not claim that there was a material alteration or some fraudulent conduct involved because he did not read the lease. That is what the Court of Appeals held. As we point out in our brief, and this is at Record 207, it's in the Joint Appendix at page 266, in the 2006 asset purchase agreement whereby New EPS and Open First, Mr. Kraft's companies, sold their assets to New EPS, that transaction asked Mr. Gagliano to approve that sale. Mr. Gagliano or Gagliano and Company did approve it on the proviso that the guarantee remain in full force and effect, Mr. Kraft's guarantee. Mr. Kraft was aware of that fact. He did not ever, at any point in time, state that he felt that anything that occurred in connection with his guarantee of the lease somehow discharged him. In fact, if we look at page 8 of Mr. Kraft's brief to this court, it says, Kraft consulted with his attorneys and decided not to take any immediate action. So when Mr. Kraft claims he became aware of the landlord lease provision, the extension provision in 2002, he complained about it, but he never at any time informed anyone that he felt that his guarantee obligation had been discharged as a result of anything. Instead, he consulted with counsel and they decided to do nothing. Well, the reason they most likely decided to do nothing is the asset purchase in 2002 would not have gone forward had Mr. Kraft stated, well, I'm withdrawing my guarantee for some alleged reason. So in substance, and I think Justice Rogan is absolutely correct, not only did the court state that Kraft was liable on his guarantee as a result of the extension, but we did have Mr. Kraft join in the motion for directed verdict, and that's cited in our briefs. So at the time the motion was made, Mr. Kraft joined in that directed verdict, and he told the court that he joined in the directed verdict because his liability depended upon whether the leases had been extended or not. This is what he told the court. So the issue of lease extension is quite critical, and I think there's no question if this court were to reverse the Court of Appeals and say that there had been no valid lease extension, well, then Mr. Kraft's guarantee would, of course, go by the boards. The flip side of that is that if this court affirms the Court of Appeals with respect to the propriety of the notice that was given to extend the leases, then Mr. Kraft is liable on his guarantee of the May 22, 2000 lease and the subsequent amendment, of course, and as well as the extension.
I want to focus a little bit on this sublease.
Yes.
On November 22nd, in your response brief, you asserted that the sublease of 2008 was not signed.
Yeah, that is correct. I do agree with counsel for Quadgraphics here when he says that that issue need not be addressed by the court if the court determines as a matter of law whether Quadgraphics was an assignee under the undisputed facts in this case. And counsel for Quadgraphics states that whether Quadgraphics is deemed an assignee or a sublessee depends upon contract principles. Counsel stated there was no interaction between Gagliano and Quadgraphics. That is not true. It is undisputed, this is a matter of basic contract law, it is undisputed that Quad Graphics had no contractual right to occupy the Gagliano premises unless Gagliano consented to that occupancy. That is undisputed. Gagliano consented to the occupancy by cashing the checks that were submitted by Quad Graphics directly to Gagliano for rent payments. So Gagliano did consent to the occupancy. The issue in this case, did Gagliano consent to an occupancy by a subtenant or by an assignee? Well, it's hard to believe that Gagliano could possibly have consented to occupancy by a subtenant when Gagliano was never informed of the sublease, regardless of whether it was signed or not. There is no evidence in this record that Gagliano was ever made aware, much less consented expressly, to any sublease.
Counsel, do you stand by? I'll tell you, I have a little bit of a concern. The affidavits in support of the motion to correct the record indicate, among other things, an exchange of emails saying, I'll paraphrase, hey, I can't read the signature. Who signed for Quadraphics? And then a response of who signed for Quadraphics. That seems inconsistent with me, to me. Two statements that, page 44 of the brief, Quadraphics never signed the sublease, or on page 50, if I recall, page 52 of the brief, that it the sublease was unsigned, that it was unexecuted. Page 53, the unexecuted sublease, et cetera.
There are two issues at issue here.
Was that sublease signed?
Your Honor, at the time that we filed our brief, I was hired as appellate counsel and I reviewed the record. I did not review every document that was produced in discovery that did not make its way into the record. When I reviewed the record in this case, the sublease that was introduced into evidence, into the record, did not contain a signature. So at the time we filed our brief, and I don't think there's any dispute about this, we were under the impression it had never been signed.
Can I just ask you this? It's not that uncommon, in my experience, that you might have one signature page have one party on it, and a second attached signature page have the other party on it. And each page may have the other party be blank.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's what occurred here. We were not apprised of the – in fact, in the appendix submitted by Quad Graphics, they did not append any signature page, and properly because it was not part of the record. They could not have included in their appendix a signed signature page. But I want to move beyond that. I
want to stay on it for a moment.
Sure.
Because I want to know whether or not we have to decide a motion to supplement the record. I certainly understand your comments that at the time – that you filed the brief, you looked and it wasn't there. But are you still of the belief that it was never signed? And are you still opposing the motion to supplement the record?
To answer the first question, Your Honor, we have every reason to believe that it was signed. I don't think there's any Mickey Mouse going on here. I think the document was signed.
Okay.
Our opposition was based simply on the proposition that in a case where the burden of proof is on a given party to get something into the record, if it wants to rely upon it, it should satisfy that burden. This court obviously wants...
Gagliano was the one that moved for the admission of it.
So well, you're...
All of this aside, are you still opposing the motion to supplement the record?
Well, yes, we oppose the motion to supplement the record because... I don't think it matters in this case because even if there were no voluntary surrender agreement, even if that is admitted, and the court may certainly do so in the interest of justice, I do believe that in connection with the issue that was presented to the trial court, which was the motion for summary judgment against Gagliano, there was never even a submission of the sublease. Gagliano argued the presumption, which I'll get to in a second. The response submitted by Quad Graphics at the time was, well, you can't rely on that because it violates the statute of frauds. The only written agreement that ever existed was a sublease. They didn't submit the sublease in connection with their motion for summary judgment. And that's what triggered this whole case, at least so far as Quad Graphics is concerned, was the summary judgment.
Okay, as I understand it then, You now acknowledge that the sublease was signed.
I acknowledge it was signed. It was never shown to Gagliano. Gagliano had no notice of that. No notice. Gagliano was never apprised that there was any sublease. Under the presumption which counsel has admitted, if I am occupying...
I know, but for the motion to supplement the record, that motion is based on, hey, we really do have a signed sublease.
That's correct.
Do you oppose that?
I'm not opposing that part of it. We do have a signed sublease. It's up to the court as to whether they meet the criteria for supplementing the record, despite that fact. If that's enough, then the court should permit supplementation of the record.
What more do they have to show?
Well, I don't think they showed reasonable excuse for not introducing the document. The fact, they were out of the case. Quad Graphics was not even in the case at the time this document was introduced at trial. They had been dismissed on summary judgment. I'm simply saying that if you want to rely on a document, and I think this is well-founded, it's the obligation of counsel to make sure the document gets in the record. If there's sufficient justification in the court's mind in this case, then the court should permit supplementation. It does not change the result here. It does not change...
Counsel, I want to shift you off of that just a little bit. I'm most concerned about the alter ego argument, which really hasn't been addressed before in these proceedings. I wonder if you can give me what you think is your best argument about why Gagliano is asserting that Quad Graphics really was the alter ego of, I think it was at what, Open First, maybe that, or maybe it was New EPS, whichever.
New EPS, Your Honor. That was in the case. The trial court dismissed the claim on the grounds that Gagliano should have gone to Quad Graphics at the time it made the purchase in 2006 and asked Quad Graphics to guarantee. Now, the evidence that we presented to the trial court through expert testimony and an expert report went through the different criteria for showing alter ego. We believe we made a prima facie case. This was briefed in the Court of Appeals, fully briefed in the Court of Appeals. It was not decided by the Court of Appeals. Quad Graphics, in its request for relief in this case, has asked the court to remand. Now, it's unclear whether they want to remand to the Court of Appeals or the trial court, and I'm not sure, and I believe counsel will address that in his rebuttal. But clearly, that was the relief sought here. This issue has never been resolved. We argued the case in the Court of Appeals that the basis for the dismissal of the alter ego claim, which is simply that Gagliano did not go and ask Quad Graphics for a guarantee, when Gagliano felt that Quad Graphics had purchased New EPS. In fact, as we point out in the brief, Quad Graphics, after the purchase, paraded this purchase as having this, as Open First now being a Quad Graphics company.
Yeah, but what
the accounting functions.
They did an asset purchase agreement. They bought the interest and then immediately sold it back.
That is correct, Your Honor. We went through all of the 14 criteria for alter ego in briefing this case to the trial court. The trial court based its decision on one ground. It was addressed in the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals did not decide it. So whether that issue should go to the Court of Appeals for decision, or whether it should be remanded to the trial court, I believe the proper course would probably be remand to the Court of Appeals if that becomes a pivotal issue.
Well, one of the criteria for alter ego when you have a large company like Quad Graphics who does this kind of a purchase is you've got to show that the new EPS is, and Quad Graphics were totally interwoven, that there was only one financial...
That's precisely what we showed. That's precisely what our expert...
level.
Excuse me?
At the trial court level?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Yes. And the court did not rule on that. The trial court did not rule on that element. It simply stated that we waived it. We waived the right to bring the alter ego claim. And this is all addressed in the Court of Appeals briefing, saying that we needed to go to Quad Graphics to ask for a guarantee. And as we stated in our appellate briefs, that was incorrect. So that is fully briefed in the Court of Appeals. Because the sole basis for the trial court's decision had nothing to do with alter ego and whether we met the standard for alter ego. It was a waiver decision.
Can this court decide the alter ego issue?
I don't believe it can, Your Honor.
Why not?
Well, I don't think the record does not contain all of the alter ego materials, to my knowledge.
So there is a record.
There is a record on alter...
It hasn't been brought up here.
Well, that's... I have to think about that for a moment. I think the court could certainly consider the waiver issue. The only issue that's been decided by any court on the alter ego issue is a matter of waiver. Nobody moved. We did not move for summary judgment, I don't believe, on alter ego.
Oh, so you're using the word waiver. Do you mean waiver or forfeiture?
Excuse me?
I said you're using the word waiver. Do you mean waiver, voluntary, intentional action, or do you mean forfeiture?
No, I mean voluntary, intentional action. The trial court, in its decision, stated that alter ego was being dismissed because the alter ego argument had been waived by Gagliano because it did not seek a guarantee from Quad Graphics.
That was the waiver outside of the court.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Absolutely, Your Honor. Outside the court. Yes. But yes, indeed.
That's a different kind of waiver.
Yes, but that was the basis for the trial. Not, was not a waiver in court, but it was a waiver by not seeking a guarantee from Quad Graphics. So the court never reached the elements of alter ego. I do want to come back to the presumption because I think it's critical in this case.
Before you do that, you were interrupted and you were saying that Gagliano consented to Quad. You were making the point that there was a personal interaction between them.
That's exactly what I would like to get back to.
By taking rent payments. And
yes.
And your next statement, which took you off on a...
That's right. And that's why the presumption becomes so critical, Your Honor. Because
you said, according to my notes, Gagliano never was informed of the sublease. That got you into whether it was ever signed.
Well, not well, it did. I didn't intentionally go into the signature.
No,
let's assume it was signed and it's in the record.
Okay.
Let me proceed from there.
Okay.
Assuming it was signed, Gagliano was never informed of any sublease, signed or unsigned, either orally or in writing. That is not in the record. We have a presumption, and whether it's tepid or not, the presumption is this, that when an occupant tenders rent payments to a landlord, the presumption is it's doing so in as an assignee. That is the presumption that's been in Wisconsin law for 150 years.
What's your site?
It's, well, the first Cross v. Upson 5 WIS, which is cited, or excuse me, 17 WIS.
That's an early site.
It is an 1864 case, and it has been cited with approval a number of times since then, and as we state in our brief, it's universally recognized. Friedman, in his text on landlord-tenant law, states that there is a presumption under these circumstances. So if there's a presumption
of an assignment,
it's presumed an assignment. That is when an occupant of property that is not the tenant, if someone occupies my property and tenders a rent payment to me, I am given to understand that person is doing so as an assignee. They're asking for my consent. It's required.
This is a rebuttable presumption.
It's rebuttable, but when it's brought to me, it's rebuttable if you can show that I knew there was a sublease. But when it's brought to me, when they tender the check to me as the landlord, I'm assuming they're doing so as an assignee. That's what the assignment, that's what the presumption says. So if my consent is required, what am I consenting to? I'm taking that check and depositing the check because I am reasonably assuming that you're making that payment to me as an assignee. That is the nature of the presumption. Quad Graphics must know of that presumption. It's been in the law for 150 years.
And your client has to know it because everybody knows what's in the law.
We assume people know what's in the law. And a presumption is there. What is a legal presumption? It's assumed to be true. It's an assumed truth that's rebuttable. The assumed truth here is that when Quad Graphics tenders a rent payment to Gagliano, they're doing so as an assignee. That's what the assignment says. So if my consent is necessary, if I'm told you're doing so as a sublessee, it allows me to go and say, I'm not going to permit you to remain in my property as a sublessee. I have the power to say no. So when the tender is made, when I accept that tender in contract terms, what am I accepting? I am accepting a payment from whom I believe is an assignee. And that's the contract that's formed. It's an implied contract. Unless, the only way around that is if Quad Graphics can show, and it's its burden to show, Gagliano was made aware of the fact that the tender was being made by Quad Graphics in the status of a subtenant.
But, you know, your argument presumes that Quad Graphics unilaterally can decide whether this is an assignee that's in his property, which he knows.
You said Gagliano?
I'm sorry, Gagliano. You're assuming that they can decide that unilaterally, where assignment and that's a contract action.
But it is contract, Your Honor, because...
I understand that, but what I'm saying to you is, even with the presumption if you stop at the end of the facts that they occupied and they paid rent.
To me, the landlord.
If you stop at that point, you are assuming that that is the end of the story, that is all that has to be shown for Gagliano to unilaterally say this cannot be a sublease, this must be an assignment.
No, the missing element there is if there is some notice provided to Gagliano, whether you consent or not, if Gagliano has notice that that payment is being tendered to it by someone claiming to be a subtenant, then there is no unilateral right for Gagliano to regard that party as an assignee. What is happening here is, absent that notice, Gagliano assumes, and properly assumes, that the payment is coming from Quad Graphics because it's been assigned the leases. That's the presumption. It's the burden of Quad Graphics or the tenant at the time, New EPS, to at least give notice to the landlord that I have made a sublease to Quad Graphics. Quad Graphics is going to take over payment of the leases. There was no notice. I don't know how Gagliano can be held to have approved, which it must. The lease says Gagliano must approve or consent. How can Gagliano consent to Quad Graphics as a sublessee if it has no information?
The same way you're telling me it's consenting as an assignment. As an assignment. I mean, I understand what you're saying. You're going to pick the assignment out of the law. But the lease still says that Gagliano has to consent to an assignment.
The lease does not say it has to consent. No, Gagliano had the right to say no to assignments and to subleases.
Right. But you're saying they said yes to the assignment.
Well, they had to because restatement of property second. If you look at restatement of property second, section 15.2, when the landlord accepts payment from a party, they are consenting to occupancy. If the occupancy, it's a tenant at sufferance in the terms of Cross v. Upson, and it's very similar to 70425, which is the holdover provision in Wisconsin law. The landlord has the right, unilateral in that case, to treat a subtenant as a lessee for a period of a year. That's in 70425 sub 5. So that's codified. Now, the common law stated that the landlord does have the right to treat the occupant who's not there with the permission of the landlord as a lessee, as a tenant at sufferance. Because in this case, once again, Gagliano has to consent to the occupancy. Now, there's no doubt that it did consent it because it cashed the checks. It knew that Quad Graphics was occupying its property. It obviously knew that Quad Graphics was making payment. It was accepting the checks. So what contract is formed? The presumption is I'm under the impression you're tendering those checks to me as an assignee. That's what the legal presumption says. It has said that for 150 years. Who has to rebut the presumption? It's rebuttable. The burden is on the person tendering payment to say, no, you knew I was a sublessee. You had information that should have led you to believe that I was a sublessee.
Counsel, does the supposed invalidity of a sublease prevent a subtenant from using it to challenge the presumption of assignment? I'm reading from page 12 of Quad Graphics' reply brief in response to your brief, and the heading is that Gagliano may not have consented to the sublease does not somehow transform it into an assignment. So that's what we're talking about.
Well, that's true with one added fact. It doesn't transform it into an assignment if Gagliano is aware that a sublease has been effectuated. That is the key element. It's the notice to Gagliano. It's the notice to the landlord. Notice is critical here because absent notice to the landlord, we have one of two situations. Either Quad Graphics is occupying that property as a subtenant, and it can only do so with Gagliano's consent. So has Gagliano consented to Quad Graphics' occupancy as a subtenant when it didn't know about the sublease? Or has Gagliano consented to Quad Graphics' occupancy as an assignee, which is presumed? So when I accept the check, when the landlord accepts the check, the landlord is under the reasonable assumption that the check is being tendered by an assignee. And by cashing that check and not telling Quad Graphics, oh, no, I'm not going to allow you to occupy as a sublease. You don't have my consent.
This will give you an opportunity to respond to the reply of Quad Graphics. It asserts that not a single case cited by Gagliano holds that the supposed invalidity of a sublease prevents a subtenant from using it to challenge the presumption of the assignment, referring to your brief at pages 40 to 42. Well, what's your response?
My response is that that is incorrect. Now, we haven't found a case, but Restatement of Property Second, Section 15.2 does speak to this precisely.
We have adopted restatement.
We have adopted that provision of the restatement, Your Honor. I can't give you the case, but we have adopted it, number one. Number two, the Crosby-Upson case, I think, is meaningful here, because in Crosby-Upson, what the court held is that a party in Quad Graphics' position would be deemed a tenant at sufferance. Now, the reason the agreement between the tenant and the occupant became material in Crosby-Upson, the landlord entered into a new agreement with the occupant. So that destroyed the presumption there. In that case, by entering into a new lease agreement, which is one of the options, there are three options available to a landlord when there's a tenant at sufferance. You can eject them, you can negotiate a contract with them, or you can accept the occupancy. Those are the three. Those are the elements that are in the statute. Also, there's a Last v. Pueller, which is a 19-second case, discusses the predecessor statute. And Last v. Pueller talks about the election that's made. It's 19-second 291.
Counsel, before you go on, what was the section of the Restatement of Property you just noticed to Justice Bradley?
It's the Restatement of Property section dealing with alienation is Restatement of Property Second, Section 15.2.
Okay, that's what I wrote down.
And the restatement also addresses tenant at sufferance with holdover, much like the Wisconsin statute, at Restatement Section 14.4 and 14.7, Restatement of Second of Property. So the point here is, in responding to the claim made in the reply brief, we cannot unilaterally make someone an assignee merely because we have the right to approve. The issue here is if we are given notice, if the landlord is given notice that the occupancy is based upon a sublease, we've got to take one of two actions. We either say, no, you're evicted, or we can, three actions, we can negotiate, or we've got to approve it. If we cash their checks, we're consenting. We're accepting the contract. So the question here, what are the terms of the contract? Is Quad Graphics a tenant, is Quad Graphics a sublessee, or is it an assignee? And we are simply saying that unless we're given some notice that its occupancy is based on a sublease of some kind, it must be an assignee because that's the presumption. We're entitled to rely, the landlord's entitled to rely on the presumption, and equally significant, when someone tenders a check, when you occupy someone's property without their permission, without their consent, and you say, but here's some money, what does that person expect the other to think? Well, given the presumption, you're held to know that that tender represents, or at least implicitly represents, I've been assigned the right to occupy.
You know, what's one of the things that's of many confusing things in this case is that when you talk to me or I hear the word presumption, I hear and see you in court, and that there's a presumption in court and you can bring in evidence. This presumption that you are talking about is one that deals with the conduct of people outside of court.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that it becomes a matter of law, what I hear you telling us, as a matter of law, your client can treat this person in the building paying rent, this entity paying rent, as having an assignment, because that's what the law says, unless you have notice at that time, or soon thereafter, that this is a subtenant.
That's correct.
And you can't bring in other evidence to rebut that presumption that comes up at a later time.
Well, that's an undisclosed intent. We all know that subjective intent is not a part of contract law. So what's going on in the mind of Quad Graphics or new EPS, which is not disclosed in an objective manifestation, cannot constitute evidence of contract. And so the undisclosed intent between Quadgraphics and new EPS, undisclosed to the landlord or anyone else, cannot overcome the presumption that the payment is being made by one in the capacity of an assignee.
So what, if any, of your theory is adopted by the Court of Appeals? Because I'm going to say to you, you're supporting the Court of Appeals. Do you want us to change anything in the Court of Appeals?
Well, I think the Court of Appeals decision, and I think reading the amicus briefs, and I have to admit that there is some ambiguity in the Court of Appeals opinion.
What's the ambiguity?
Well, the ambiguity is I think it's possible to construe what the Court of Appeals said, that if you accept the benefits of the property that you occupy, you are an assignee. Now, the Court of Appeals went on as an alternate holding and said that the sublease in that case was void. We were not privy to it. We did not consent to it. And I believe that is correct. The Court of Appeals could have added that we did not know about it. Now, there is a suggestion by Quadgraphics here that that's not in the record, and maybe that is something that would have to be tried. Now, I will concede the point that that is not in the record. My only response is that's
not in the record.
Whether there was any constructive notice. I mean, I can represent to the court, it doesn't do any good that my client did not know about the sublease.
Constructive notice of the sublease.
But there is a suggestion there may be, even though there's no evidence of it. And my response is that's a burden that's imposed upon Quadgraphics. If it had some evidence that Gagliano was aware of this sublease, it should have brought it forward, wholly apart from the signed document, which, as far as I'm concerned, if the court may admit it, it's not critical in this case, because what was accepted by Gagliano was a payments by Quadgraphics made in the presumed capacity of an assignee.
And you didn't have that document about which we're debating at that time
when we filed our brief, Your Honor, I was unaware that there was something that had been signed. That's okay. Correct.
Oh, were you aware at all that there was this agreement?
We were aware of the unsigned sublease, yes. That was formed a big piece of our appeal.
And when were you aware of that?
We became aware of that during trial when it was produced discovery.
That goes back to my question about when
we were never aware of it prior to the time. Prior to the
time
Quadgraphics moved out of the property. That's correct.
Okay. Now, I'm just looking at your prayer for relief here. Okay. Conclusion. You respectfully ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals holding that Quad is liable for rent due under the extended leases and Kraft is liable for rent owed under the extended May 22 lease as amended in 2003. Does this have to go back to anybody then?
Well, the Court of Appeals remanded the case to the trial court for a trial on damages. There's no question this is not the end of this case because there's been no submission of damage evidence.
Okay. That's my point. So you'd accept this as a matter of law and then send it back to the trial
for damages.
Court.
I would ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals
and,
decision.
And you're concerned, if I understand your response to my question about the Court of Appeals decision, that there may be, maybe not, ambiguity as to whether you had constructive notice of the sublease.
Well, no. I was speaking of ambiguity in the Court of Appeals opinion,
yes.
Not on that issue, but rather whether the court. I mean, this case was taken, I believe, on a petition in which the suggestion or the allegation was made that the Court of Appeals has upset, turned Wisconsin law on its head because it's held sublessees liable. We don't take that position. The issue in my mind, and I think the Court of Appeals meant to hold, although its language was not precise, that Quadgraphics was an assignee, not a sublessee. But to the extent it could be construed, the Court of Appeals decision could be construed to suggest that sublessees stand in the same status as an assignee, that is incorrect. Now, on the issue of constructive notice, the Court of Appeals did not address that at all. This was raised by Quadgraphics in its brief, simply saying there's nothing in the record on this, and I agree with that. I agree there's nothing in the record. The question is, does that go back for a trial to determine whether, because it would be critical. If the constructive notice was there, it's critical. I'm simply saying Quadgraphics had the burden to show some evidence of that, and they did not do so.
Okay. So you think that this is an okay decision in the Court of Appeals, but you might say, you might have the court add the language that says nothing in the Court of Appeals opinion should be construed to change couple of hundred years of
that
law.
That is correct, Your Honor. Yes, and, exactly. I think the result is correct. I think the language that was used could be tightened.
Okay. Anything else you want to add if you were writing the opinion?
I would make the very comment that you made, Your Honor, and that is that this court is holding that there is no change in the law with respect to subtenancy. Subtenants are not liable as assinees. But in this case, Quadgraphics was an assinee, and under well-established law that we all agree
it's
upon, it is liable.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Your Honor, with due respect to Justices Bradley's pending question to me during my principal presentation, let me first address one aspect, at least, of Gagliano's counsel's presentation. In the last 10 minutes of his argument, counsel for Gagliano has essentially completely transformed his position. He now says that, oh, by the way, we did consent to Quad being present. Never before have we heard this. And he then goes on, and this is the most material thing, to completely change the law. Not only does he change the presumption from an evidentiary presumption, but a presumption on which parties in the real world act, he changes the entire issue into one of the existence of an actual contract between the subtenant and the landlord. No cases, except for express assumptions or novations, no cases look at this. No case holds that the payment by a subtenant of rent directly to the landlord gives rise to a direct contractual relationship.
Have you looked at Restatement of Property 15.2?
I'm sorry.
Have you looked at the Restatement of Property Section 15.2?
Your Honor, if I have, it does not come to mind immediately.
Okay.
But this
we'll
is
look at it.
Completely different from.
Then you think that it's an evidentiary issue. This presumption
is at
not a statement of the legal of a legal principle that binds parties' actions.
That's correct. Okay. And I think what you need to know here is that because of Quadgraphics' internal processing check writing procedures, in fact, a check was being issued from Quadgraphics for payment of new EPS's lease from the very beginning. It didn't just start happening at the sublease.
You say from the very beginning, took over in 2006. Yes.
2006 is what I mean. Mm-hmm. The law is there is no direct contractual relationship between a landlord and even an assignee. The assignee's liability or liability to the landlord is predicated on privity of estate. That's the basis. Not privity of contract. Even if you're an assignee, you still don't have privity of contract. That privity of contract remains with the original tenant.
Isn't that true of the subtenant, too, that there is a privity of estate?
The only, by definition, the only privity of estate of a subtenant is with the primary tenant. There is no, perhaps for the period of occupancy,
okay.
Although I actually do not think the terminology goes that far, but there is no question that one way or another, a landlord is entitled to some compensation for the period in which the premises are occupied. But this last analysis asks for a complete and total revision of the law.
Has a juggernaut notice of the sublease. Would you respond to that, please?
Okay. The notice of the sublease is pertinent only to determining whether there was consent. Landlord consent. Landlord consent, in turn, is relevant only for purposes of determining whether the landlord could kick the subtenant out. No case has gone farther than that. And, in fact, that's what Gagliano argued. An extreme argument. He said, and this is throughout the briefs, he said, because there was no consent, not no consent to sublease, no consent whatsoever, the sublease was void. And because it was void, therefore, it was a legal nullity. It couldn't even be considered at all. I think we've addressed it. I think that we've shown that, strictly speaking, and with due respect, the argument is technically absurd, because it basically says, because your attempt to convey a portion of the real estate was ineffective, therefore, you managed to convey the whole estate. And that's absurd. Now, I see the red light is on, and there are a number of points that in the brief that we will remain untouched, but with the indulgence of the court, could I address Justice Bradley's pending question about what happens?
You're required to do it, and do it quickly, please.
I will do it quickly. Basically, I tried to draw a decision tree. If this court determines that new EPS itself is not liable, then there is no claim that can be asserted against Quadgraphics. If it determines that there is a triable basis for liability against new EPS, then the alter ego claim must be confronted. Clearly, Gagliano has a right of appeal because Quadgraphics prevailed on that preliminary issue. Strictly speaking, it probably needs to be remanded to the Court of Appeals, unless this court were to ask for rebriefing on it. If this court is sufficiently interested, of course, one or the other might petition this court for review, and this court could then approach it directly. But
is there a factual record sufficient to make that decision?
There is a record sufficient to make a decision on the basis of the threshold legal issue that the trial court did address, specifically whether there was a waiver of the alter ego claim.
What I'm interested
okay.
in, though.
There is no sufficient record in which to address the underlying merits of the alter ego claim, because there was never a motion for summary judgment brought by Gagliano, and hence we had no opportunity to produce counter evidence. In fact, what we tried to do is simply address the threshold issue.
And that wasn't presented to the jury?
Oh, no. By that time, Quad was out of the case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our argument in a very complex case, which the court is appreciative of the briefs and the oral argument trying to simplify it. And 12 AP 122, Anthony Gagliano and Company versus Open First LLC et al. Is concluded. The court will take a few minutes in recess so that the students from Brookfield Central may leave, and if there are additional students from Brookfield coming in, they can come in. We are in recess. Thank you.